This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. It is a pleasure to both be with Harold Holzer and with Abraham Lincoln, talk about the leading edge. Bill Russell, I, Paula. The specific quote that we were toward which you were speaking was that in the inaugural, one need not rebut but to affirm. It seemed to me, and I went back to look at where that's really important, that it's so easy in politics to be rebut, rebut, rebut. Somebody who will, like Lincoln, take a beating from the competition, and he's got Stephen A. Douglas in his face, and then there are, of course, all those southern states. But to affirm, isn't there something deeply affirmative about Lincoln?
I think it was his nature, and it was also the realities of the political situation he faced. Had he not affirmed that there is a process, that the process is over, that he has won under the rules we established, and boy, have we heard that 100 different times in the last 10 years here in this country. Sometimes we have been comfortable with that notion, sometimes we haven't, but, you know, he only got 39% of the vote, but I've won the electoral votes. It's true, I've won all my votes in the North and only 2% in the South, but those are the rules. You didn't put my name on the ballot in some of your states in the South. You all have to obey the rules. We're one country, indivisible.
And those rules were set very clearly both by the Constitution and the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that got forgotten.
As Lincoln said, I shall have the most solemn oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. You don't have an oath to destroy the country. I have an oath to save it. That's an affirming statement as well. I mean, it all fell on deaf ears. Some of this was going to happen. But he set a highly principled benchmark, a highly principled rationale. In my own political life as a press officer, one of my bosses was Mario Cuomo, who also has the gift of language and writing and communications. But he always said, find the rationale. You can't run, you can't govern, you can't articulate a new policy unless there's a rationale. That word, he used it all the time. What's the rationale? What's the rationale? And it's, you need it.
One of the things that I learned from this, just sort of brand new, popped out that you articulated so beautifully, was I began to understand Lincoln's commitment to economic democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't just, there was this party called the Free Soilers. And again, I'm out of the Midwest, and some of those traditions, I know the names, but the importance of free labor as compared to slave, unfree labor.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And if you look at the world today, the importance of free labor, that labor should have a voice, that there should be opportunity.
Labor is more important than capital. He said it more than once and more than in different ways. But absolutely. Now, there are those critics who say that his commitment to free soil was a commitment to white workers, and that the notion of slaves is, his opposition to slavery was born of the fear of competition that cheap or free labor would have to white labor. But there's enough in the literature of Lincoln to say that the basic right of a human being to eat the bread that he earns with his own hands, that's the magic economic the economic policy of Abraham Lincoln. It's so simple, and it's so right.
Economic opportunity, as mm-hmm. I think those were the words that you used, being a real driver for Lincoln, who is known as the rail splitter, less well known for his years on the river and a riverboatman. I don't know if that's the right term, but
flatboatman. And boy, they love to tease him about that, the opposition. Just because you've mauled a rail or drawn a flatboat through a river doesn't mean you can be president. Well, he showed that that being a pilot and being all the wedges he drove were as a rail splitter. He didn't drive wedges as a politician. There's a phrase.
Should
have used that in the book.
And it's really...
You've inspired me to a new tortured metaphor.
It's also a really important tortured metaphor as we look at wedge politics now.
Yeah.
That's not trivial.
I think we're back to wedge politics.
You think so?
They were pretty good for a while about it, but it's not as bad. I don't think it's as bad as it was in the Nixon era, but it's there.
There is so much in this story that is still there. I would think that you would do some head snapping over the course of writing this book, of seeing what's happening in America in the 1860, in a very specific 4-month period in winter of 1860, and what is happening.
I was afraid that there would be no, I mean, I didn't want there to be a comparable crisis in 2001. But I think there were
2001?
What year are we in? 2008.
Well, you could have been talking 2001.
Yeah, well, that's on my mind, too. But I should get the year right. That would be good. I think the two most difficult transitions were Buchanan to Lincoln and Hoover to Roosevelt. Not only because they were different parties, but because there were real crises brewing that seemed to cry out for instant attention. Now, I think between November 08 and January 09, we may be in a similar situation with between the Dow and the credit crunch and all of the and mounting unemployment. The difference is, I think the major difference for us will be that the transition is only 6 weeks. It's not 4 months. I think that's that's an important difference, and it's better. It's a real improvement. Thank you, Mr. Roosevelt, again.
And it was only 1937 that change came with Roosevelt.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. It helps, but the downside of that is, yes, they had telegraphs, but the velocity arguably is different today than it was then. And we may have lost the margin we gained by changing the rules.
Yeah, maybe it may be all equal, right? Although Lincoln thought that the volume and the velocity was huge in 1860. The constant bombardment of reports. He even made the mistake of reacting to President Buchanan's message, his final message, based on a faulty and incomplete report over the telegraph wires. And at one point privately confided that Buchanan should be hanged if he gives up federal property in the South. And you know, he never made that mistake again. He didn't hastily judge Buchanan. He didn't prejudge Buchanan. And he kept his anger to himself. And when he got to Washington, I'm sure Seward didn't drag him to the White House. He went with Seward to the White House, knocked on the door, didn't call up first because there were no phones. And they said, Abraham Lincoln is here. Buchanan was up in a cabinet meeting. They took him upstairs. He got to watch a cabinet meeting. How else would he know how to run a cabinet meeting? A few days later, Buchanan called on Lincoln at the Willard, which was a real show of continuity and mutual respect. I think that was important for the country at that time, much overlooked. So there's another bullet point lesson. Be respectful of your predecessor. If you think he's done a terrible job, it's almost over. Be respectful of the office that you're going to occupy. And I think that was another lesson Lincoln taught us.
One of the challenges is the now constant campaigning that goes on. These campaigns go on for 2 years.
Yeah. At least.
And part of, you know, Lincoln was able to say, I won. And was able, and I think a lot of what you describe was, you know, was predicated on, one, his belief in the Constitution and the importance of it, of the idea of free people, of liberty, and the connection in a social environment. But he didn't have to keep campaigning from the day he walked in the door. He was able to focus on governing.
Yeah, and imagine a time when he gave a speech in New York. We always think this should happen in New York, just one speech, and that should be the campaign. The Cooper Union Address, about which I wrote before this, February.
And we're widely recognized for having done so.
February 27th, 1860, never campaigned for the presidency after that. That was late February, nominated in May. Between May and November, no campaigning. Between November and Washington, only the appearances on the inaugural journey and a few waves from his porch and visiting his mother and going to Chicago and having a receiving line. But he, something to be said for dignified silence.
You say a lot about dignified silence.
We'll never do it again. But I think, you know, I think actually, if you look at the way both of the candidates behaved, and you can criticize it, and many have, the way they behaved at the November meetings at the White House with Secretary Paulson, at which President Bush pleaded for that first bailout proposal that didn't win in the House. Neither Obama
October,
nor McCain.
Not November.
Was it October?
October.
October.
September.
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 One of those months.
It was.
But it was 08, not 01.
September 08.
I'm not really supposed to know this stuff.
No, I'm here to help.
You've been having to deal with the 19th century. This is cheating.
I skipped the whole 20th. That's why I'm having trouble with the 21st.
But you're talking about.
They were silent.
you were talking about the current condition when there, and in the time of blabbermouths, when you get nothing but yakety yak from, what do you call them, the Bill, the chattering classes?
The commentary at the chattering classes.
The idea that you can sit silently is one that gets massively overlooked. And I guess I'm thinking about what you're telling me about Lincoln. When people criticize, in this case, Obama for being cool, this is a bad thing?
And they used the word in 1860.
Yes.
That's one of the most frequently asked questions I get in about Lincoln's Cooper Union address. He talks about a situation in which the righteous are calling the sinners to repentance. So the sinners are calling the righteous to repentance. And Lincoln said, that is cool. That is like someone asking for your money and saying you're stealing from me. And people keep asking, what did he mean by that is cool? When did that expression come into being? And it had its own idiomatic use in the 19th century, and it meant pretty much what it means now. Corrected and rather cutting edge.
Harold Holzer has so much from which I can learn about the world and about Abraham Lincoln. We're going to be back in a moment. Stay with us.